Hi everyone, welcome back to the Congressional App Challenge Debugged podcast. I'm your host, Medha, and today we have a very, very special guest with us. Gabrielle Hibbert is a security auditor and researcher at Least Authority, co-founder of Web3 native startup Future Proof Collective, and fellow at the Decentralized Future Council. Gabrielle started working in the technology sector in 2018 after discovering DLT while at Brandeis University. Having an early career in public policy and economics, Gabrielle was able to leverage her policy and research skills to advocate for blockchain, Web3, and privacy-related tech to leaders around Washington, D.C. through the National Policy Network of Women of Color in the Blockchain and Decentralized Future Council. Gabrielle's areas of expertise consist of Ethereum-based protocols and DEFI. She has guest lectured on Web3, privacy, and algorithmic bias at the College of William & Mary, Spelman College of Arts and Design, and Brandeis University. Thank you so much for joining us, Gabrielle. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. One quick note, it's pronounced DeFi, just
DeFi.
Yeah.
Perfect.
it looks weird, but yeah, that's how it is. But yeah, I am doing very well. I am super excited in terms of some things that are about to happen in this space, which we can get into a little bit later today. But
yeah, that's super exciting to hear. And with that being said, I first want to ask, for the sake of our audience and myself, can you give us a brief rundown of what Web3 actually is and like what that means? Like, why is it even called Web3?
Sure. So what I like to do before even getting to the weeds of what Web3 is really explain the context in which it occurs. So in general, we can think of there are three iterations of the web. So in the 1990s, we get to this version called Web 1, which is the read or write only web. This is kind of based on static web pages. It's not as social as we use the web today, but it is a time in which households have more, I would say, personal computers, PCs in their home, and we're starting to get online. I would say at the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, we get to the tech bubble crash. And afterwards, we have a couple of companies that are really working in the space and building up what is now Web 2. And generally, we can conceptualize as Web 2 as the social or participatory web, which is mainly has the factors of, microblogging platforms, e-commerce, software as sales, things of that nature. And there's been a huge shift coming into where we are today. We're kind of at the I would say personally, the lagging bit of Web 2, both socially and politically. And Web 3 is this concept of having a decentralized internet. And what that means can vary from person to person, but very broadly, you can think of it as a iteration of the web that uses blockchain-based protocols, and where data is not centralized. It's kind of spread out across various nodes.
Yeah. That's so interesting. And so my follow-up question is, like, with the rise of Web3, do you think that will completely replace what we know as Web2 today? Or is it more like there's just going to be a shared space?
Sure. So yeah, we are in a very, I would say, it's an interesting time to work in and for the internet, because as I said before, we have a lot of dying infrastructure in Web 2. Just from a protocol standpoint, we have a lot of dead links, we have parts of the web that we aren't really using, and we're having, at the same time, this push towards wanting to own our own data and to have better access over where our data goes. So this is all kind of contributing to the push towards Web3. Do I think that it's going to be a switch overnight? Not necessarily. There are still a lot of user interface and user design challenges that folks in the Web3 space are helping to build around toward as well. I would say the other piece that doesn't really get as much attention when we're talking about the transition from Web 2 to Web 3 is the concept of the digital divide. Moving from from the Web 2 structure that we are so used to another one, there will be some communities that are left behind. How do we ensure that folks get onto Web 3? That's going to be a big issue, and something that a lot of companies and governments need to think about as we move towards this new iteration.
That makes a lot of sense, and I actually never considered the fact that it would recreate and like rediscriminate almost the digital divide. And so that makes me curious to like what kinds of, I guess, policy changes would you like to see put into place or to help prevent that from happening, or like steps that action items that companies or governments can take?
Yeah, so there are so many different hurdles to this one question. Right. The first that comes to mind is that currently a lot of our policymakers are still trying to wrap their head around what Web3 is. And the misconceptions around what Web3 is astounding, especially for someone such as myself who works in this space. But once we get the education piece down, it comes down to educating the wider community and public as well. You know, it's, I would say, a lot different from how we are used to interacting with websites and applications in Web 2, and that's going to create a little bit of time in terms of getting folks onto Web3. But outside of those two education pieces, it's also an infrastructure piece, mm-hmm. right? So there is digital redlining. There are places where the, you know, access to broadband is not as strong as it should be. So again, it comes down to these pieces of our internet infrastructure that are really lagging, and that needs to be a part of the conversation as well.
That makes sense. And now I'm really curious to hear, how did your interest in Web3 cultivate, and how did you realize that this was something that you really wanted to almost dedicate your life to?
Yeah, so I got super interested into the space around 2018, 2017, which is very funny because 2017, 2018 was the period in which there was a huge crash in the market. So I got into it at a very, it's a contentious time. Yeah. But at the time I was working in public policy, and I was just beginning my master's program in policy and development at Brandeis. And I had heard about Bitcoin and Ethereum, and I held a very, very small amount of both. But I really didn't know what either did right. until a little bit further in my first semester, where I took a course on international development and blockchain. Two things that you would think don't go together. But at the core, both topics really speak to this idea of governance and development. Two things that I, you know, love doing, have worked on in various capacities. And that's what brought me into the space. This idea of creating new governance models that can be implemented online. And since then, I've just been kind of exploring, you know, newer forms of governance through decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAOs, within the DeFi space or the decentralized finance area. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all a very exciting place to be for someone who is not traditionally in the tech space.
Yeah, that's really incredible. And props to you for getting into it so early with such a, like, interesting path as well. And that actually leads me directly to my next question, which is, like, as someone who's not, you know, generally supposed to be in the web, in the tech space, according to societal standards. And, you know, it's made harder, you know, and I can speak, like, being a woman in tech, it's very difficult. So can you speak to, like, what kinds of obstacles, I guess, that you had to get over? Was there any sort of imposter syndrome, or, like, even, like, peers that were discouraging that you had to, you know, move forward and move through?
Yeah, so I, you know, as I said before, I was not a computer science student in undergrad. I had very little training in the tech world until I made the career change. And I definitely dealt with a lot of imposter syndrome. And I think one thing that really helped me get over that was talking to other marginalized groups in the tech space and seeing that we had a lot of commonalities in terms of, you know, facing the types of, I would say, discrimination or even types of just general, you know, imposter syndrome that we all face, right? So one thing that I keep finding very interesting, specifically for the Web3 space, where my non-technical background has been a huge asset, is when folks are trying to create new governance models or new ways of implementing microfinance ventures. These are things that are not, you know, based in programming. These are things that are based in policy and based in development. And, you know, this is a space where I see needing to have both specialties to actually create a product that is sustainable and that is diverse enough to help whatever community that product is for, right?
Yeah. That, first of all, that's so inspiring that, you know, you were able to get into such a contentious and such a difficult and, like, not well-known space with, like, such a non-traditional background. But I wanted to ask, like, do you think coming from a non-traditional background actually helped you have a more unique and take a more robust perspective when it came to, like, the downfalls and the advantages of Web3 and the space itself?
Most definitely. You know, to really create a product that is sustainable for various communities, you do need a social science background, which I really enjoy because I get to share the things that I have learned in my early career and the types of topics that I've learned in my master's program and really create a holistic product. So you need both, essentially. The more diverse the team, the better the outcome of that product will be, in my opinion.
That's awesome to hear. And that leads me to my next question, which is, how can people, especially young people, especially since, you know, the Congressional App Challenge, our audience deals with a lot of middle and high school students, how can people that young who don't really have a technology background or don't really know a lot when it don't have, like, a huge concentrated knowledge when it comes to technology or finance or any of that. So how could they get involved in Web3? And, like, do you have any advice for them?
Sure. So I would say one of the biggest refrains in the space is to do your own research. And there are a lot of great communities, whether they're on Discord or on Reddit or just in, you know, immediate personal circle. You'd be surprised at who in your community wants to talk about Web3. And in terms of getting involved with projects or learning more about projects, I would still stick to Discord. I feel like there are a lot of great communities that are forming around various Web3 topics. And one of the more fun ways to can exercise knowledge of Web3 would be to join a DAO or a decentralized autonomous organization where you get to experience both off-chain and on-chain governance. In terms of advice, I would say I think now is when a lot of free resources about Web3 are being published. There are tons of websites that have short tutorials on, you know, how to create a basic smart contract, which is how I got into the space. And I believe that that program itself was called Crypto Zombies, of all names. Right. And it's a fun, you know, free resource for folks to see if they want to, you know, begin learning more about the space. So I would say, yeah, research and Discord are your best friends for this specific sector.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up the podcast, I wanted to ask if there was anything else you wanted to add or say for our listeners.
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest misconceptions I did want to mention earlier was that the Web3 space is not solely focused on cryptocurrencies. Yeah. I feel like they get conflated very often, and they are very much separate entities, and they are just not one and the same. Although you can use cryptocurrencies within the Web3 space, they are not the same.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciated learning about the Web3 space and all of this. Like, it's all new to me, and so I really appreciate you coming on and giving us a big breakdown. Thank you so much for your time. And with that, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tune in for the next episode.